Late word from authorities in Greece, the co-pilot of a Cypriot airliner was alive when his plane crashed, killing all 121 aboard. That's according to the chief coroner of the investigation, who said all the autopsies on victims carried out so far showed the victims were alive but not necessarily conscious when the plane crashed. Investigators believe a rapid loss of cabin pressure led to crew and passengers quickly losing consciousness, that despite the fact that the Boeing 737's oxygen masks were deployed. If you have questions about what happened, about airline safety measures or flight attendant instructions before takeoff, give us a call. We'd also like to hear from those of you who've been aboard an airplane when the oxygen masks descended. What happened? Did they work? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@npr.org. And joining us now is William D. Waldock, a professor of safety science at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. He's also the associate director of the Center for Aerospace Safety, investigating airliner accidents for 25 years now, and he joins us from his office in Prescott, Arizona. Nice of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
How unusual is this sort of accident? I mean, again, we don't know exactly what happened with this airliner, but based on what we do know?
Well, it's highly unusual in that most of the time, if there is some sort of a pressurization issue or a decompression of the cabin, the crew is trained to deal with that. They have very specific measures that the pilots have to do. Most directly, first thing you do is put on your quick don oxygen mask. Secondly, you take the airplane down to a more breathable altitude. Normally, it's going to be about 10,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
The closest accident in recent years that seems to be like this one would have been the Payne Stewart crash from 1999.
The famous golfer who was in a private plane, and I guess a lot of people saw the video of the plane just flying endlessly on autopilot till it ran out of gas and crashed.
Right.
The conclusion in that case was a decompression, that it happened so quickly nobody was able to get to their oxygen equipment?
Well, it wasn't that they weren't able to get to it. It was that the oxygen equipment itself had malfunctioned. The crew probably tried to get the masks on, but the fact that there wasn't any oxygen available to them, they passed out relatively quickly. And from that point on, the aircraft was in a climb autopilot mode. So they just went up to the service ceiling of the airplane and their absolute ceiling of the airplane and flew on for three and a half hours.
Hmm. Let's get some callers involved in the conversation. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And this is Jim calling from Ames, Iowa.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you very much for taking my call. It's
sure.
A very interesting topic. I'd like to know if you could describe the general process of what happens to the human body as an airline loses pressure and when it's in the higher atmosphere.
Well, it kind of depends on how fast the pressure changes. At the worst extreme, we would have an explosive decompression of the cabin. That's almost always a major hole someplace in the fuselage, blow a window out. In that case, the pressure inside is going to equalize to the outside almost immediately. The first thing you'd notice would be a rapid condensation of all the moisture in the air. Essentially, you've got fog in the cabin. You'd notice a massive change in what your ears felt like, what your sinuses felt like, sort of like the opposite end of going when you go down in a pool, for example. The other thing you'd feel is this massive rushing of air as it comes past you. At 35,000 feet, useful consciousness, 8 to 10 seconds, completely unconscious, 15 to 20 seconds, and down from there.
8 to 10 seconds?
And on average at 35,000 feet, that's about how much time you've got to deal with it.
All of us, I guess I'm speaking for myself here, sit and read our science fiction novels and utterly ignore those little speeches that the flight attendants give us before the beginning of every flight. They don't mention, I don't think, though, 8 to 10 seconds to get that mask on quickly.
Well, they don't tell you that. What they do say is in the event of a loss of cabin pressure, the masks will deploy, reach forward, put them on. You know, like I say, this is an unusual circumstance. You know, the masks did deploy, and for whatever reason, doesn't seem to have mattered.
Hmm. Jim, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I do have a follow-on question, Neil, if you do have time.
Go ahead.
Then with that, is there any way to, for example, when pilots are experiencing tremendous G-force, they sort of squeeze their body and try and retain consciousness. Is there any way to do those types of things in that 8 to 10 seconds and buy yourself a little more time?
Well, that wouldn't matter. The reason why you're trying to do that with G's is because the blood's trying to leave the brain. And literally, when you do the G maneuver, you're trying to squeeze the blood vessels so that you keep as much blood in the brain as you can. In this case, there's just not enough oxygen in the air to breathe.
So that
really wouldn't matter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Jim,
sure.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Let me ask you again, William Waldock. Ordinarily, what happens to cause decompression? I gather you're saying this kind of explosive decompression is extremely rare. Under most circumstances, when there is decompression, it's a very small hole in the fuselage somewhere?
It can be a small hole. It can be a leak in a seal. It can be problems with the pressurization system itself. In all of those cases, the crew should have plenty of warning that it's developing. And again, the procedures are very straightforward. Get the emergency oxygen on. And the pilot's masks are different than the passenger's masks. Sometimes it's a misconception that what the pilots have is exactly what the passengers have in the back. But the pilots have, they're called quick don masks, meaning you're supposed to be able with one hand to get the thing over your head and in place. And it's a positive pressure mask. It feeds you the oxygen. Whereas the masks in the back are passive masks. They feed oxygen into the mask, but it's not under pressure.
Mm-hmm. Would it matter where in the aircraft the hole was? I mean, if for example, it was in the cockpit, would it affect the pilots more quickly than if it was in the back of the plane?
Well, until the pressure equalizes, you probably wouldn't have a lot of difference. You might have a second or two difference in how it affected people, but again, with an explosive decompression, it's going to happen suddenly. This does not sound like that. It sounds like more of some sort of a rapid decompression, but not explosive. So it took some time for the pressure to change.
Here's an email from Jude in Cleveland. Is it possible to design an autopilot system that can sense decompression in an aircraft and automatically send the plane down to a breathable level even if the pilots pass out? It seems such a system might have averted tragedy in Greece.
It's possible. Part of the problem you've got there is once you take it out of the altitude, where does it go if there's nobody to fly it? I guess theoretically you could design a flight management system that was capable of, in the event you have a pressurization system and the crew's not there anymore, pre-designated emergency landing site. You know, certainly we have autoflight capabilities that can land the airplane, roll it out, stop it, and taxi to the gate. Those have been around for years.
But you can't just send it down to 10,000 feet. There's a fair number of mountains that are higher than 10,000 feet.
Well, not only mountains, but you've got usually a lot of other air traffic that you have to worry about, too.
Mm. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Scott. Scott calling from Miami.
Hi. I may be lacking an understanding of the chemistry here, but if you dive underwater, I think most people can hold their breath for 20 or 30 seconds. What prevents pilots or folks from doing that when there's a decompression in a plane? Why would they lose consciousness so quickly? And I can take that off the air.
Thanks for the call, Scott.
Well, what happens when you're diving, the pressure is increasing. When you change the pressure suddenly violently from about 8,000 feet, which is where most airline cabins are pressurized, to up to 35,000 feet, you'd almost feel like you're surrounded by a vacuum. And it's not so much holding your breath as when you try to breathe. There's just really the air is too thin to do much good. That's why the 8 to 10 second useful consciousness.
Yeah, you also know when you're going beneath the water oftentimes. And if it's decompressing quickly, you may not get any warning to hold your breath.
Well, there's a little bit of panic factor there, too. Usually most people are going to react the other direction and try to breathe faster.
Mm-hmm. Let's go now to Tony. Tony calling from San Antonio.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm a military pilot. I've flown with the Air Force for 25 years, and we routinely have every 5 years altitude chamber training where we go in and we drop our mass at 18,000 feet with another pilot still on oxygen to feel our, you know, the loss of oxygen, how our fingernails turn blue, how we begin to lose, you know, we begin to kind of feel goofy. You usually will do some kind of a written exercise, and we do that routinely, and we have a lot of other aerospace physiology training. But what kind of training are civilian pilots required to do, particularly in light of the Payne Stewart accident? You know, mm-hmm. they didn't have probably about a couple of hundred hours of flying experience in the front cockpit.
Yeah.
On the civilian side, with the airline industry at least, pilots are trained how to use the systems. I don't think there's any specific requirement they go through an altitude chamber ride. I've been through it a couple of times myself, and it just really impresses you as to how fast that stuff happens.
I mean, for me, I'm sorry to interrupt, I've gone through probably in my career five chambers now. And, you know, as you age, your time of useful consciousness also decreases, or based on your physical conditioning, it could increase. And, you know, it's the old picture worth a thousand words when you sit there and you start writing out the test, and 15 seconds into it, you're writing gibberish.
Yeah. Well, usually they're being videotaped, too, so you get to see yourself being goofy.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's a very valuable training. And not only that, at different altitudes, we're required to have the oxygen more readily available. And above a certain altitude, one pilot has to be on an oxygen mask when the other one is not.
Well, that's one of the questions, I think, right now. If this was just a pressurization problem, standard procedure is if anybody leaves the cockpit, the other one goes on continuous oxygen above 25.
Tony,
yeah, that's what we would regularly do.
Okay,
yeah.
Tony, thanks very much for the call. And William Waldock, thank you for your time today.
Well, fair enough.
William Waldock, a professor of safety science at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, investigated accidents for 25 years. He joined us from his office in Prescott, Arizona. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.